Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Horsemanship Remark Show, the relaxing edition. Oh my gosh, who has? I was so stressed on Sunday. It was crazy. So let's see. It is November 2023, and it is pouring down rain. I'm going to get a little bit organized here and see if I can add Michael. Debbie, morning, just thinking about you. It's weird not to hang out every single day. I don't think I like it very much. Oh, here's Michael, we're gonna add him. And the invite. And let's see, oh, Debbie, I'm so excited to get to complete the six keys maintaining a fun, safe, enjoyable horse. I'm almost done.
I thought you were supposed to be done with that a few weeks ago. Come on.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Hey, you said it was going to be out. You said it.
No, I didn't. I said it was going to be up at this week, Friday, for you guys. And then I'll have it ready for anybody who wants to get it. They'll be able to get it as well. So Jody, Mike, good morning. Who else is here? Robin, good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
What's on your mind this morning?
How cool your podcast was with Temple Grandin on Sunday. Hopefully everyone caught it.
So Monday, I was just pacing around the house because coming off the adrenaline. I'm like, no more celebrities except for Beth until I can be sure about the technology. That's part of what's
happening. Sure. Yeah, that was a little, but it worked itself out pretty quick.
Yeah, so what did you think? Anything stand out to you? You guys, I want to hear what you guys
I haven't read any of her books recently. I mean, it was several years ago I last read any of her. It'd be interesting to pick up her newer book and look through that. So it was really neat to hear her talk about it and hear what she was emphasizing in terms of horses and her, you know, more recent work with horses and helping people with their horses. You know, some of it was kind of like, well, sort of that goes without saying from our perspective at this point, but it was still interesting to hear from her perspective with autism and the way her brain works and the way her brain thinks, to think, just to remember, horses really do think in pictures. I mean, I've just been thinking about that. I have two horses right now that, you know, are very concerned about the world around them, just as their general, you know, they just don't have a lot of exposure. I think both of them grew up kind of scared, a little bit overwhelmed, not understanding anything. You know, they're three and four right now, or two and four. So just as I'm introducing things, going, yep, that would be a different picture for them. Yep, that would, because to me, the kind of most fascinating study she referenced was the children's playset.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, you could walk by it, and the horses got comfortable walking by it when it was at this angle, and then they rotated it, and the horses were immediately skeptical and sketched out by it again. Just because, I mean, it was the same playset, the same palette of colors, the same location in space, but just the shape of it had changed. So just watching these horses go, well, the tarp was here today, but the tarp wasn't there. The tarp is draped over the roping dummy. The tarp is draped over the wall, you know, which I've always been like, well, you know, whatever, they're still scared of it. You know, you just keep chipping away at it and go, okay, you're going to learn that this isn't a problem. But to think, okay, yeah, totally different. Like, they haven't categorized it together yet, because today, especially as kind of new as they are to being exposed to things. I mean, the one they said they probably hadn't been in an indoor arena ever. I mean, so like lots of new inputs coming in. Some days they're alone in the arena. Last night I was working late. Other days they're in the arena and there's horses coming and going and doors slamming and other people with flags. And so all of it's a lot of sensory input. And so that's where I was when she was talking thought picture, visual pictures, feeling pictures. And it just kind of made you brought your attention to focusing on what is the, how is the horse perceiving all of this. That was kind of interesting. And then the concluding comments, and I think it was your words. So we say horses, dogs, people are inextricably linked at this point. And I think that was kind of a neat way to wrap it up. There's another thing or two in there that caught me. I can't remember what it was. Too much has happened since I've listened to it.
So,
What stood out to you? I mean, what, I mean, obviously just the privilege of interviewing her and whatnot, but what, in terms of what she shared, what she, she clearly had ideas she wanted to convey as related to horses. What kind of struck you in terms of a, oh yeah, it's a good reminder.
I just want to say good morning to Katie and Joanne and Julie and the rest of you guys
Katie,
joining us.
Katie who?
Katie M.
Ah,
Melena,
Katie and daughters.
is that how you say it?
That's who. Well, I don't know how you say it.
Yeah.
That's who was here for boot camp last week
Yeah,
or
she
week
said
before last.
Wendy and Morgan say hello. And
Hello.
what videos would you recommend they watch right away?
On the Buck Channel.
No.
Oh, an insider.
Yeah, we're the Jimmy's out, yeah.
I still like the one of Rook, with the four quarter yield. And was it Rook doing hindquarter four quarter up and down the pen? One of the first ones you did in the hindquarter four quarter. I don't know, go watch videos of Rook, groundwork videos of the Rook. Those are all pretty good.
Yeah. Just tap through. Yeah, very cool. Okay, so Temple Grandin. First of all, that's part of why I was pacing around on Monday, because it's just the strangest thing. To have that experience after all these years, right? A couple things stood out to me. First of all, just hearing somebody else's perspective without having to really input that much, right? Of course, basically, I loved her point about valuing horses or valuing people. Like there was the same sort of thing when a person can't verbalize in that way. Obviously, horses verbalize a little bit, but not that way. That does not mean that really does is not a measure of intelligence. And I think that was really interesting that horses and humans are emotionally the same. Like she mentioned that because we had talked earlier in the day. Those of you guys that I haven't told that to. So we had talked earlier in the day for about 45 minutes, and she met something she mentioned during that conversation that she clearly wasn't interested in talking about for the show, and then some things she they matter to her on the second go around, and one of them was how emotions are real in animals. And that comes down to our conversations about anthropomorphizing bad in the sense that we're putting values, thoughts, and values on the other individual. But that doesn't mean that they don't have emotions. And it's so interesting for her to emphasize, like, when she started writing her writing way back in the day, she
Couldn't use the word here.
those things legit got cut out, right? And then, thinking about some things, for instance, is the herd bound a fear thing,
That
right? Because she,
was interesting. I would have liked for her to say more on that. Like, separation anxiety is a different system operating than a fear response. I mean, it obviously, I mean, it makes them afraid, but what is it? I mean, I guess it's the element of them being herd creatures.
yeah,
Puts
and
that in
like,
its own category.
no, because yeah, because when we were talking about Nigel, I got to ask her about Nigel and the dendrites, and the pig study that she had done. I've talked to you about it, and I was thinking back when basically you guys, what happened was my lip is on Nigel about 10 years ago. We were doing a ton of things together, like a lot, every single day, many, many hours. And I was clicker training him. I was doing, it was just an amazing time of exploration and discovery, and that had been going on for many, many months. And then I left on vacation for 2 weeks. I came back, and he was cribbing, and never stopped cribbing after that. I started when he was about 13, so kind of interesting. And I just noted that it happened right when I had left. Essentially, I'm thinking some sort of withdrawals, right? And I had been reading her book, Animals in Translation, I believe, at that time, and she was talking about enriching animals' environments, and she was talking about pigs and dendrites, additional little dendrites growing in their brain. And then, so I was thinking, well, maybe I did that with Nige, and then he, that was the problem because I had grown this. But so I asked her about it finally. And pretty cool. And she said, no, that was her thought. She goes, no, it is just a straight up separation anxiety because horses bond. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So when she came down to saying that the fear was different than separation anxiety, I
Wow.
think that that can be true. I mean, whatever, she's the scientist, but I also think there is an extreme survive, like there's two different things, right, Michael?
There's
Like there's a
separation anxiety almost in terms of the bonding and closeness and the, I don't know if this is anthropomorphizing, probably not, the sorrow or the loss or the, yeah. But I can
Sure.
see
So,
there being a distinction. That was not the distinction in her quick listing the different systems that that operate in the horse. That wasn't, she didn't flesh that out. But yeah, that makes sense with more context of your earlier conversation.
yeah. And the reason I think it's important to touch on with our discussions is just because herd bound is a fear thing.
Yeah.
Like that is a fear response, in my opinion. It's and that's hard to describe in the sense that, let's say you have two horses that are pair bonded emotionally, or a
It's
horse
hard to separate those two in
and
that
a horse
case.
and
But it would be akin to someone moving away and the sorrow and disappointment and loss associated there versus we're in this dark alley and we get separated and I'm fearing for my life. I'm going, where the hell is my support? That's,
exactly.
you can see those are two entirely different things, but yeah.
And that's important as horsemen to understand those things, because a horse that's afraid for their life is very, very dangerous. You don't know how to organize. That's super sad when they have separation anxiety. anxiety in terms of like a friendship. And both of those things are very profound, but different. So that could be an interesting study. Somebody could, not that it really matters. That was part of the thing. It's like interesting to think of the practical application of some of these things. For instance, the concept of flags. She talked a lot about getting horses used to flags, and I would have been nice to direct the conversation just a tiny bit more regarding creating categories. Because I was interested to hear what she had to say about, like, I didn't know, maybe she knew, well, it's this many things in, it's this many trailer rides, or it's this many flags or whatever. But then funny to think about, well, two things that I just want to say how magnitude of understanding the rectangle, the impact of all of that understanding rectangle, but separately, it would have been so cool for her to have seen somebody using a flag to show a horse something, to comfort a horse, like.
Which is interesting in terms of when you're talking exposure, repetition, taking it from individual flags, like she was talking about a flag versus a tarp versus a big, American flag or banner flag versus a horsemanship, flag we'd use versus pendants like you'd have at a car sale, like getting them used to all those flapping things, and then that becomes a category. Like you're saying, like if you can really do the deal using the rectangle, exposure to the point of this isn't gonna harm you. This can be actually a pleasant thing once you're in the rectangle. How much more quickly can that translate into the other items that she was listing in that category? Obviously, I would say much more quickly. So yeah, it'd be interesting to hear from her experience, with these different groups that she'd work with and different trainers that she had exposure to, what how she would have seen that. Because from our perspective, and this is interesting, I was talking to Mike about it yesterday,
Mike, I can't wait to see him.
he was talking about, I mean, she's coming at these things from a research mentality, like double blind studies, this,
Non-confounding.
yeah, I mean, everything was has got to be repeatable, have a control group, that sort of mentality. And then you said, but realistically, horsemanship is scientific too. It's observe, remember, compare in the sense of this, based on years of experience, multiple horses, like you're constantly, I mean, you've used the phrase for years, collecting data, and the horse is collecting data. So in a way, if you're observing, remember, comparing your own little scientist, conducting studies that maybe don't have a double blind element to them or a control group, or but it is still, I mean, you think of like Jane Goodall out there hanging out with the chimpanzees and she became the expert. There weren't, I don't know how much she did in terms of labs and comparing behavior in like a captivity sort of environment, but she was certainly became an expert, was a scientist in the sense of just observing. It's kind of, and Temple does this and did the same thing too. I mean, just her early, I mean, you can just, you've seen the movie, which who knows how dead on accurate it is, but getting down in the chutes to observe what the cattle are observing, that's her unique observation with the way her brain works, that wasn't necessarily a scientific study at first. She's then backed it up as a scientist, as a researcher, So I don't know. It's like different types of scientists, different ways of thinking about collecting data.
Yeah, and I totally agree with Mike because the reality is whatever works is going to have some sort of real reason. Of course, tricky to put your finger on the spiritual part of it scientifically at all. But perhaps we could even still there say that there is some mechanism. But okay, so I was listening to Vinay Prasad the other morning, and he was talking about running studies and confounding factors in studies. And I really do think this absolutely applies to horsemanship, which is why it takes a lifetime or a lot of experience to start to be super effective. So he was talking about more affluent grade schools having better educational results than lower socioeconomic schools, poorer schools, let's just be real, right? So the more affluent school had Mercedes-Benz and Teslas and whatever fancy cars driving up, and the other ones were just cars that I would drive, and so one could say, well, no problem. Let's just get all the parents the fancy cars in the poor schools. Because clearly one of them has the fancy cars, one of them has the economy cars. So let's just make sure everyone has the fancy cars and then the education will work or be equal, right? And of course, but this is the same thing with horsemanship in the sense that, and we see this, right, all the time. It's like, well, I don't know what a good example is. Well, this saddle pad must mean that the horse is more comfortable with making transitions from trot to canter. It's like, no.
Maybe.
I mean, probably, yeah. It's like the chances of that being it are like actually tiny compared with the reality of this is just something they have to get used to, right? So the confounding factors that you would encounter in any kind of scientific study, I was thinking, well, this is very similar in the sense, her point of like what the cattle see, and you could be like, well, maybe there were a bunch of other factors. You have to test it, and you have to test it repeatedly. Obviously, if you just bought the, poorer parents Mercedes, what you
See
would
if that
find
works.
out very
Let's try
quickly,
it.
like this does not work, right? So that's where.
Kind of funny. I was actually explaining to Lydia this morning causation versus correlation.
I can't wait to see my soul sister. I can't wait till she grows up. Then we can really be friends. Be great. Yep. Yeah. So what'd she have to say about that? Or did she understand it?
Well, she slept in the last 2 days, which she never does. She's always up, like on the clock. But she's been coughing and coughing and coughing for a month. So we got her an inhaler to see if that would help because cough syrup isn't doing it, whatever. And she said, well, it's because I'm using my inhaler, which good observation. It's very likely a possibility. I don't know if that would cause her to sleep differently, but it would be surprising if it did. But so she made connected those dots and then started saying, well, possibly it might be causation, it could be correlation too. Like they're just happening at the same time, but one isn't necessarily causing the other. So.
And that's so important in horsemanship. We've talked about this a million times, but it's hard to put words to it. It's like, yes, collect data, right? And
There's
especially,
so many
yeah,
variables.
and collect data from the people that you like, what they're doing with their horses. But how many times have we said the words are just words? You have to try it yourself in an open-minded ma manner. And, you know, there's so many factors like, well, am I presenting it the same way? Why is it not working? Or, you know, none of that makes sense. I don't care who said it. You know, that's not right. So, and that's okay. Because we always talk about do not follow blindly. It doesn't matter who that individual is. And yet, as you get down the line, you might be like, okay, you know, this
You learn to
field.
trust yourself, and you know pretty quickly who you want to trust, whose information you can rely on, because you can evaluate the results.
Exactly. And this is where we say, okay, the horse is the only judge. And every horse, of course, being a little bit different too. That was kind of interesting when she said, you know, some horses are food more motivated and some horses are more relationship motivated. I thought that was super interesting that she, from the way that she studies things, would be very sold on that idea. As we talked about in the pre-show, you know, I was thinking, well, how much of it is just clarity? Because horses, that is the thing they dislike the most. It's
Confusion.
confusion, right? So let's say a clicker training experience where you are using a mechanical marker, which is very much more reliable than an inexperienced person offering a softening. And food being super obvious before you show a horse the center of the rectangle, which I do want to get back to. Your thoughts on that?
No thoughts. I
No
mean,
thoughts.
well, yeah, I mean, it's just obvious. I either have a treat going into my mouth or I don't, as opposed to, well, and I often use the example of, how many horses get sweet on going on a pedestal after someone, asks them.
Clarity.
And there's this just struggle to get them there and to explain it. And the horse is going, why the hell would I step up there? Why don't I just go around it? And the horse finally gets up there. And they're like, yeah, that's the best. And they leave the horse alone. And the horse goes, wow, this was an accomplishment. I think this makes them happy. So, I mean, you can make that shift in energy from, come on, get it, to, yes, there it is. Very stark for the horse. But like you say, as you're trying to do that in more subtle ways in the context of, the rectangle, united circle, and energy up, energy down, neutral, active neutral, all of that can be very mushy as you're first offering it.
Which is why
But
the cow is
the
licking the
pedestal is a fantastic example of how much it works, outside of the fact that, as you said, it's just so concrete. Like, I'm on a pedestal or I'm not. It's as black and white as a treat versus I'm on a united circle and I'm not. That can be kind of mushy for the horse if the people, the person is mushy.
100%. That's why, like I was just saying, cattle is this supposedly this magical thing, like, oh, horses love a job. It's like, yeah, horses love clarity, and for the person it is, which is not, there's nothing wrong with that, that's just how it is, you know, that's just the process. But once again, it's like, why is it working? Why is the pedestal, right? That's the whole thing, is just thinking, oh, horses like pedestals, or horses don't like wind, or remember that one I told you. Or, oh, some YouTuber. It was just hilarious because, you know, you get the microphone on and you're a tall dude and you're like, you've got an audience, and he just said, like, as if it was the gospel, horses don't like wind. And you're like, well, that's the
Depends
Mercedes-Benz
on how many
G-Wagon.
flies are out there.
Anyway. You know, so the cat.
Uh-oh.
And it's like, it is the clarity. we can seriously see the thread. Clicker training, working cattle, standing on a pedestal, jumping the barrels, all of those things. Like, we can see that the clarity is what is beneficial to the horse. But that, so Michael, back to the rectangle and the flag, this is a very interesting point to me, because as we are using a horsemanship flag, the point is not to get the horse used to the flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
The intellectual item, the emotional item, really doesn't have anything to do with that. We're using the flag and the halter and the lead rope to show them something else.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so one could think, oh, we're getting them used to a flag. And it's like, yeah, but that is a side note.
Yeah, and without the rectangle, I mean, just think how drawn and energy up, energy down, pause, peace, all of that. Think how long it's going to take to expose them to all of these different flags without using the rectangle to help them through it.
And if you don't show them about the rectangle, it will never matter. The only thing you would get out of it is a horse that has tuned things out. As she said, desensitize them.
Yeah.
I mean, she said that straight up. And from a scientific perspective and from, yeah, a perspective like she has, so interesting, because I respect her so much. And that helps me to just think, okay, you know. But that is the mechanism, right? And that is exactly what we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you're showing them.
And you can, yeah, I don't know. You can do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that in terms of, I want them to not be worried about this. But when it becomes, I can't use this to direct you, or you're just, you know, you have no concern with anything and you have no responsiveness to my direction. I don't know. It is interesting though, because let's say, and this is just sounds funny, super funny from our perspective. Let's say you wanted them to completely think flags don't move me, tarps don't move me, like nothing moves me, but your energy moves me. And so now you have to get that across without using the tarp, the flag, the tail of your rope, whatever, to follow. I mean, it's just you.
And moreover, what you're really trying to say is, here's the middle.
Yeah.
The only reason you're moving them is to get them in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're in the middle, then you just move that around,
yeah.
Right? So yeah, if you desensitize them to something where it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything to me. It's like, okay, so then you're
like this, I mean, example being the saddle, you know, like I'm generally not going to use the saddle like a flag and drive them around. Like when I put a saddle on you, the saddle straight up doesn't mean anything until I'm in the saddle, my legs are in this, you know, my feet are in the stirrups, and now it's directing you. But when you're going around, those stirrups are bumping around on you as you're, you know, moving around the round corral. That's blank noise. It doesn't mean anything. So, I mean, there are elements where, but they're still responsive to you based on your energy or whatever else you might be using, not the saddle, but the flag or the tarp or whatever, to motivate a change in response to your energy to get in the rectangle. So, I mean, it's not beyond what's possible. Say you just don't want them to respond to a tarp. Like, I would never drive you with the tarp. That's just not something, it's just weird. Why would I?
What I always say to Novella, it's not for you. No, it's not for you. That means nothing. However, you know, the horse does need to stay in the middle of the stirrups. you know, they do need to stay under the saddle. Like there are some parameters of like, here's where we belong in the world, which is sort of the overall point, right? This is where you belong. This is where you fit. And when you're there, everything's good.
Yeah.
So
it's just fun. It's just fascinating. All of it.
Yeah. And so back to the Mike's comment of like, it is scientific. It's like, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just that they're more complicated, more nuanced, more intricate things. That's really what it comes down to, which I suppose every area of study or pursuit, you know, has those layers. I always wonder how much
it's almost like the limits of, like the limits of the scientific method. And I might be, you know, thinking too small in a astrophysicist would be like, what the hell are you talking about? There's, you know, but the limits of the scientific method in that there are so many variables that you cannot, there is no way to form a control group on all of the nuance of the, you know, the environment, the horse, the person, the, you know, the exposure that the horses had. I mean, the body style, the balance, the, you know, atrophy of the muscle, the
extra life balance,
you know? Yeah, and the way the horse feels that day, what's sore, hungry, what's not. I mean, I can't imagine a way in which you could isolate all the things we're trying to take in a controlled way and draw conclusions that you could present in a paper. I mean, if you think about it, like so many of these horses, this horses, that this scientific study. And we're like, yeah, why do you need a scientific study for that? That's like, duh.
And why does
who wasted all their time researching this? Like, doesn't everyone know that? Or isn't that fairly obvious? But.
And how limiting is it to waste your brain cells on those things that aren't even going to get you to the place you want to be. In fact, they could lead you astray because, and you know, really, this is horsemanship or any art is just, you know, because there's too much intuition. And so we've talked about this a million times. If you are here with your in your frontal lobe with the data, even though hello, that gives you a place to end, maybe it all makes sense there, but that is this much of the experience. And that's the nitty-gritty of the reality, in my opinion. The intuition and the, which we could say, oh, the feely part, but people think the feel is, well, anyway.
Well, we could talk. And I mean, that bonding component, the separation anxiety, the, you know, the fact that the horses have emotions that are all wrapped into all the components, all the variables we just talked about. I mean, I actually, at one point, thought I'd go into psychology for about 10 minutes. I started taking these psych classes, and it was all about this study or that. And I was young and not real sharp at that point. But I was just like, this is stupid. This is like generalizing way too much. This is not getting at the complexity of every individual. I'm like, this doesn't sound very fun. I dropped 3 classes that semester and picked up something. I was like, I don't want to go into psychology. This is not what I thought I wanted to do, what I was thinking it would be. So.
Yeah, and that's where the medium of art is
I was actually
Valuable.
next time I have a chance to have Buck on the show. I think I
January.
have a January, Florida. Okay. Well, maybe I should just wait till then to
No.
my question. Well, thinking about how he went from, just say as a starting point, and this is if I'm putting my own ideas onto it, that's, well, certainly the case, because he would have to share his way of expressing it and whatever. But just from reading his books and knowing him, on a level, and seeing who he is now, and imagining based on what he said of his childhood, to hear him talk a little bit about how you go from the horses being your safe place in a world that was very chaotic, or not bringing that was very chaotic, to there being this deep bond. Like, was that there from the start? I would suspect no. Like, I mean, he was cowboying for a while. He talks about being, striving, frustrated in the corner of the arena, 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, trying so hard to get something done. He's out cowboy. I mean, he's the same as the rest of us, had to work to figure this all out, as a kid, as a teenager, when he first met Ray. I mean, he had to go through the process of figuring it all out. And there was certainly, I would imagine, not certainly, I would imagine there was points at which, I mean, I would think there had to be a transition from, I just feel safe with the horses, but I know nothing. And then I learn something just cowboying and being around horses and trying to get along with horses on some level, then meeting Ray. And then now to the point where obviously a wealth of knowledge, but also that opening up a level of bonding that, like, how did that all feel to him? I don't know. I asked the question of Mike way more succinctly, just it'd be interesting to hear how that shifted as he was around Ray, as he came to understand the horse.
Are you basically asking how it went from his heart to his head to the spiritual experience? Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yeah, from the safety of the horse, which was kind of a, I feel like I can escape the world, or I feel safe here, to, the horses. Maybe a tool at some point, or a way to get the job done, to now I'm around Ray and it is kind of in my head, but now, just like all of us, are trying to understand the mechanics of it, and then it moves into more feel, and then it opens the door to this spiritual level and this oneness that there might have been a bond with a horse as a kid, but how is this different than that, and what was the journey?
Yeah, and we could probably ask a lot of people that question.
Yeah.
I wonder how much
I
that.
mean, I could talk about it for me. I don't know if anyone wants to hear it.
I want to hear it.
Well, I mean, maybe I kind of have talked about it. So I don't know if I want to talk about it
Sure.
now.
Yeah, you don't have to. You got to be feeling it to come around to that discussion, you know.
Exactly. That's where you have to, like, be like,
Well,
you get, okay, so you have how many opportunities to get Buck on the show over the year? And then you have the, well, is he like ready to go play golf? Is he,
that's
what
the
is
thing
his
about
gut doing that day? Are the electrolytes all in balance? Is today the day for this question, or?
It's way easier to envision that with a person,
Yeah,
right?
in person as opposed to on the show, and
Oh, well, and with the horse is what I was thinking. You know, it was like, is this the right time to ask so and so if they want to do this? Or, you know, even I noticed the time of day, like when is a person more optimistic? So I want to talk about one of the girls who, and I won't say her name, but this kind of fits into it because here's the thing, with the horse, we can't be babying them. In terms of like, well, you're not feeling really good today, so you don't have to toe the line. That is not a thing. Except, I guess we would say if they're hurt, you know, physically hurt, which then you got to be feeling around for that. But I think generally we make way too many excuses for the horse and we as people. And then that doesn't do them any service. So someone was asking me, that's why I posted it, Horsemanship Insider this morning. You know, it's like, well, at first, directing the feet precisely and feel super micromanaging. The better you get at it, the more it's just setting it up for them to find it. But the question was a little bit like, well, when do you let them have an opinion? I'm pretty sure that was the gist of it. You know, when do they get to say versus when are you not a dictator? Like, everyone kind of understands that the horsemanship, I was so awesome on the show. She's like, yeah, let's just call it good horsemanship. I'm like, yes, let's just do that, you know? But the idea that we should be partners. There's a lot of factors in that. First of all, yes, that is super important, and to think about it from the horse's point of view, to think about what they're seeing, to take in all those things into account, to not be super duper ego driven, because if you're in it for your soul, then of course you're going to be hunting around for some sort of spiritual, what am I trying to say, a growth awareness. But also I think there's a factor of keeping the relationship in the right, and by right I mean working framework whereby we are the leaders because we know how the answer, which is a little tricky because we have to actually know the answer. And then the horse can need more support or less support depending on how educated they are. Guys are going to see that I just did a video series that'll be out in the next couple days. And, it's the six keys to maintaining a fun, safe, enjoyable horse. And once again, when we come down to that, you're really just touching on these things because you don't have to zoom in on them and make them happen or educate your horse or, you know, so it's a lot more flowy the more educated and experienced they get. Same with us, right? It's a lot more flowy the more experienced and educated we get. But that does not change. And this, I do feel like sometimes this gets misunderstood. It doesn't, in fact, change the leadership role. I mean, it's such a limited word, but still, you know, it doesn't change that the horse needs to be disciplined. In fact, they will be more disciplined the more they zone in on the center. Right? And it's not a favor to them to be like, whatever, you know, tell me how you feel today. Right? It's like, no, because that doesn't serve you, horsey. And Michael, the farther I get or the more horses I develop, the more convinced of that I become in the sense that the experience is bearing that out.
Well, I think a lot of, I don't know who asked the question, it doesn't matter, but I think a lot of times that question comes from a place of questioning oneself to help the horse find an answer that feels better, right? So you're doing your level best to do this with the horse, to get the horse centered, to help them be more peaceful, whether that mean less reactive and scared or more connected. You're working on your horsemanship and you're trying to get them with you and you're trying to get more accurate and you're trying to dial in the rectangle and be specific, and the horse is going, fuck, you're so overwhelming and you're not really getting me there. And so you're trying to get all of this to happen, and then you're going, well, maybe something's wrong, right? Or maybe like backing off and giving them space is going to be the answer. And that, like we just said, like you have to be unafraid to experiment. So if the horse is going, whoa, you're just really coming in strong here, and I don't know what the answer is, and you're noticing that in your horse, maybe backing off is the right thing for you to search around and figure it out. But that doesn't change the result that as you advance with your horse, like, and you get the skill to maybe not overwhelm your horse like that and have them confused because there's no hints in the right direction, or you're kind of picking at them and not being effective. So they're going, I don't know what you want to pair of this. Whatever. We could use lots of different examples, but I think it can come from self-doubt or frustration at your ability in the moment to get what you know you want, the picture you've seen, of others, or moments that you've had with your horse that where it's like, that's it. And then how the hell do I get that today? Or, like, how do I repeat that thing I felt that once?
Oh, it's that part's maddening.
Yeah. So yes, that does not change. Yet at the same time, I think the reason that can be this inner turmoil is because it's not easy, right?
Yeah, I'm all of what you're saying. Agree. Agree. I would just add what I've been kind of thinking about is, yes, listen. I mean, your horse, you need to listen to the feedback, right? And it'd be like, you know, what you how you feel or how you're receiving this or your response to that, like, duh, that's how
That's how
they
you
are
would
going to
adjust, yeah.
adjust. Exactly. But that is different than allowing their opinion to direct the goals.
Yeah.
Like, well, they want to get back to their friends, so I'm just that's how they're feeling today. Or they
Or their
don't want
horse that doesn't really want to move out, they're kind of, that
or
wouldn't be very.
exactly I was just or they're tired today, so I'm not going to ask super precise transitions. Or they don't like the arena, they're just not an arena horse. Or and I just it's like I really think those are two different things. It's not a service to the horse to be wishy-washy or to have different rules based on based on the feedback. But see, Michael, this is the thing, and you and I have the luxury of understanding a curriculum that fits together. Not that we're, done learning or how to apply it, but there is, you guys, there is a set way of operating within. There's a skeleton, a scaffolding that absolutely fits together and does work. and you don't have to be wishy-washy at all. There's no wishy-washiness required. There's no asking your horse's opinion required. How you apply those and how artful you are at being clear, at controlling our own body, at controlling our, then you, this is of course exactly as you say, the benefit of the horse is that the call and answer. That's not the same as, and maybe this is not what she meant. I might be getting this totally wrong, but it's what made me think of it is that's not the same as questioning the scaffolding.
Or, yeah, or questioning whether it's fair for you to have whatever expectation. But that is where I go to when you're questioning yourself and your clarity, it becomes easy to question whether it's fair. But if you trust the scaffolding, which it's hard to do, maybe as you're learning it and not super effective at certain parts of it, or not as effective as you'd like to be.
Or making a mistake. I'll use an example. I think back to Vivian, and I'm sure I still do this to some degree, but I remember there was a time when, oh, I was doing this all the time. I was not controlling my legs appropriately at canter. So I would be in the wrong canter position asking for a flying change or whatever, and if I had been overly forceful and not taken stock of myself, just do it. It's like, well, they can't do it because of blah, 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 blah. Or like you, Emma, are making from a mistake. You're doing it wrong.
Just
And
want to give up. Just kidding.
but well, I
No,
guess what I'm saying.
the reason I say that is it is just difficult. I mean, you have to work at it. You have to not be afraid to not get it right, not beat yourself up, and just keep going, keep trying.
And make sure your horse knows that you're annoyed with yourself, not them. Nathan, we used to talk about this all the time. It's like, just make sure, you and I have talked about this too. Just make sure your horse doesn't think you're frustrated with them when you're just really frustrated with yourself.
When you're frustrated with Emma,
Yourself. Yeah.
I wasn't frustrated with myself, I was frustrated
Oh, right. Or me. There we go.
you. Right,
What was
remember?
it recently, Michael, just in the last couple days where you were doubting me?
What?
Yeah, it's there's something. I don't know if it's on what it was. Something. Something. I'll think of it. But I was like,
It's
oh yeah,
been eating at you, hasn't
no, I wish I could put my finger on it, but it's not because I know how this works. First you doubt me. And then it turns out, and you're like, oh yeah, I was doubting you. I'm like, yeah, I know because I know you well enough at this point. I can't think of what it is though. I feel
Yeah.
like maybe the Charlie videos, or you didn't watch those
I
yet.
don't
I
want
don't
it.
know. Oh, the novella. The novella video of the little short I sent you of the reins being too long.
I wasn't doubting you. I said I was observing the same damn thing you were.
Yeah,
No
I don't know.
doubting
Maybe it wasn't that. I don't know.
you.
It
Because
doesn't matter.
you were saying, I'm looking at it going, is that right? Is that what I wanted? Like you had to evaluate it yourself. And I was going, that was the first thing I noticed. Like,
What other video did I send you? Oh, never mind. We don't want to waste our time on this today, but I'll think of it. I'll think of it. Anyways,
we haven't
so.
talked about that one on the show because that was a you put that reel up too, didn't you?
I did.
That a reel? Yeah. Like we
And
just.
I, what'd you guys think about that? Tell me all about it. I wish we had some other people to give us this. And I've watched it back and I'm like, I don't think I would change it. I don't think I would change it. But Nathan and I were talking about this, that in order to truly have credibility within yourself, and of course with from other people, is you have to show your work. And with horses, it takes time to show your work, many years, right? So we'll see if that is working with Novella, you know.
Not only we'll see, but you'll see, right? You're collecting.
This absolutely, right? So for instance, not hammering on her to maintain gait, even though I wasn't expecting her to maintain gait, but how precise it was for her to get to that. Like, I didn't just throw the concept out the window, but, you know, how demanding, what am I trying to say? Yeah, my intolerance for mistakes, or it's just like, or how many repeats do you do versus how much do you lay the hammer down? You know,
it's like I said, why don't we just all give up? It's so hard.
Yeah. Or I was thinking about with Katniss, you know, with her four quarter yield, because you had a really responsive, you know, four quarter yield on her. And of course, the feel that I want is a little floppier, right? Then it's a different taste. And so you kind of have to, I kind of had to be like, I'm just going to pursue this feeling, and the four quarter yield falls apart, unlocking in the back, you know, stepping behind, like all these things. And then, but then it comes around and kind of fits together in a floppier way. Right. And it's like, okay, so at which point do we infuse our individual taste on all of this? Mm-hmm.
Right from the get-go.
But like you say, that's hard to do as you're just learning. Oh, yeah. Because you don't know. How are you supposed to know in the beginning whether... I really have thought about this with the Charlie videos. So those of you guys that are members of Horsemanship Insider and watch the recent 11 Charlie videos, you're going to see, like if you just... I was telling Julie, if you just watch the beginning of ride number one, and the beginning of ride number 13, you will see the difference in the hind quarter yield. But if I didn't trust myself and was just
trying to make it like 13 on day one, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have to be precise and exacting and not wishy-washy and go, that's all you can give me, but you can't try to mash the whole thing out on day one either.
Mm-hmm. That's where, so I made the comment about the cat, you know, the one that's getting gentle. Mm-hmm. Oh, nuisance now and amongst my legs. But, you know, being like, I know this cat is going to get to where he's a nuisance because I have enough experience to see this all shaping up. However, on the day when he's first letting me pet him, you cannot mash that in. It's impossible. You can't mash that in. You just, even though you know it's going to happen.
Be a nuisance.
Right. Or like somehow force it. So the same thing applies to developing a four quarter yield that you like, you know, or a canter that, you know, you could be like, okay, today, it's feeling, you guys will see on the Novella trot videos, you guys are really good to see this. I think it's coming out next, maybe at the end of the month. So fluffing up her trot a bit. And you'll see me go, it's on its way. And how much more can I get out of this day? You know, whereas you got to fight that. It can only come as fast as it can come, even though you know what it's going to be. That is definitely something.
Would you say it's, if we're trying to parse out, you know, getting what's reasonable for today over against, oh, is this fair to ask of my horse? Oh, they're not feeling it today, or I'm not being clear, so maybe I shouldn't, even ask. Does it come down to, as I often point out to people, well, is your horse trying? Like, are they searching? And I said, if they're on the hunt, if they're searching, if they're trying, maybe that is enough for today. Maybe not even finding it, but the try, if there hasn't been a try, but that's, yeah.
But the shit part about it is sometimes they're trying and then you don't show them and then you abandon them right before they get that answer and they're like,
What was it?
yeah,
Why was I crying?
I was asking,
Yeah.
it was a hard deal. Oh man. Another thing, well, finished. Do you have any additional thoughts on that? Anybody else have any additional thoughts on that? And I'm sorry if sometimes I'm missing some of your comments. I'm looking here to see. I can see Diana. Hello, good morning. Margie, Bonnie, Faith, how? Sounds like you're talking about resonant frequency. Oh, look, the comments are coming. Here we go.
Is that faith, resonant frequency?
No, this Julie. Julio, it sounds like you're talking about resonant frequency and being able to know how to find resonant frequency on demand. Resonant frequency is when two wavelengths and frequencies align so that they sustain or amplify each other without any additional outside energy needed. Okay, so Julie, you have to help me out. This cool concept, but how does that apply? I'm not sure how that applies to what we were just talking about. Maybe, and this could be an old comment too, unfortunately. Just because I'm not always seeing them in order, but I will. That's so annoying.
It's
Yeah.
better than them over our Facebook broadcast.
What was that?
It's better than having them scroll across.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's no good. I'm not sure. But so I want to give a practical example of something that we've talked about a lot, which is oh, first of all, that thing where you have so much doubt about is a horse ever going to get over this, or is a horse, they're just this way, they just have some sort of issue, and then you start to think about it. And it's like going to wear a halter, period. That's just it. They're going to lead around one way or the other. That's just how it is, right? But imagine if we were worried about our horses pawing the halter off. Is it, maybe he's just not going to be one that, it's uncomfortable on his head or whatever. It's like, no, that's not a thing. And of course, it's not a thing. We all have that. We've talked about this before, right? So Rook, she of all the things. Now Gary's gonna be mad at me for saying it this way, but she blind spot under her chin. Whew, it's pretty legit. Like on her, it could get you bucked off. Legit, because it scares her. Now it's better, but it's something that I have to for sure get. All the way, all the way, all the way, because it's pretty dangerous. But I was putting the halter on her the other day, yesterday, and the lead rope going underneath her chin, obviously back and forth, back and forth, which I'm sure she was not a fan of to start with. Like, of course she's over it, because she's been exposed to it enough times. She clearly understands what it means. Swings to one side, she's probably gonna need to come that way. So it does mean something. She's not completely tuned out to it. But then other times when it's hanging just there, it means nothing. And so she's
So it's almost like how it's kind of like how bad do you want it in a sense? Like, and there is the self-doubt that you're referencing, like, can I get this done? But if you're like, this is gonna happen, like Stephanie and I talked about with her colt that she started in Sheridan, it's like, no, excuse me, you're not gonna start this fussing and kicking out at me and not going. You know, there it's like a little bit of kind of ponying up and going, no, I'm not gonna question myself or kind of shirk back. And it's different but similar to, no, we're gonna get this done.
This is just how it is.
How it is,
Yeah.
I might spend my lifetime doing it, but this is going to get accomplished. But that
Sureness.
the sureness and the commitment to it, right? Like, you have to stay at it and be willing to follow through.
Which is easier if you're sure that's going to work.
Yeah. Or if you're committed, right? If you're not distracted.
Oh, that's true.
Or, you know, there's also the thing, and Buck talks about this relatively frequently. If it's not enjoyable to be with your horse, you're less inclined to be with your horse. But if you get to where it's enjoyable to be with your, so you can go, I want this to be better, but it's really miserable to work at it, right?
100%. Yeah, 100%.
So then I don't take it through to the end, which is the opposite of, this halter is going on your head, right?
Yeah, it's like, of course it's going on your head. Well, Temple Grandin actually mentioned that, because I was asking her about her childhood and being autistic, and you know how her parents kind of held her feet to the fire in the sense that she wasn't allowed to not participate. She had to do things to contribute. And I said, well, because I have a little nephew who's autistic, five, quite autistic. And the question is, well, how do you force him to do anything? And to what degree should you force? How much allowance are you making for this individual's needs, you know? And she goes, well, my mom wasn't going to leave a six-year-old child at home because they didn't want to go out, period.
Mm-hmm.
This was happening. You're coming with me because that's how it has to be, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't want to go to school. Well, I'm sorry.
Listen.
You're going to school. And yet there's other things where you're like, oh, no, do you have to do?
Right.
But you're exactly right. How much are you going to dictate for a kid as opposed to let them grow and have their own ideas and their own choices rather than you just doing, you know, making all their decisions for them? Yeah.
And that's the thing, is being somehow, and in horsemanship, it's a little, on one hand, it's more black and white, I think, than people think. But once again, that comes down to a scaffolding that you believe in and that works.
So what's more black and white than you?
Horsemanship.
Are you comparing it to with people?
Well, kind of, or just regular parameters. Like, there are some things that just you have to do, otherwise the consequence is unacceptable. You have to drive on the right side of the road in the U.S. You cannot just randomly be driving into oncoming traffic, otherwise that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this the same thing when it comes to horses to varying degrees. For instance, Novella, my little Lipizzan, guys, is white. Therefore, you are going to be having a lot of baths and your tail's going to be washed a lot in your life. That's it. Now,
she doesn't like water though.
She does, right? She's afraid, and she absolutely was afraid, and she absolutely has taken time to, you know, in Dayton, I had to be the one to, nobody could even hold her because she was just such a turd. So it's like, no, I have to be the one to hold you because I'm the one who can realign you in the rectangle, which is super annoying when you're trying to get wet. You know, you're getting wet, you're trying to get it done fast. It would be so nice if somebody else could. So my point is that this is a multi-year process. It's not, and if I was a better horseman, it would be faster, but the point is still the same. This is happening, girly. You're white.
Yeah.
Right. So So back to Rook. Two things. First of all, I find it so interesting that horses, for instance, that are so work could are normally super afraid of things being thrown at them, big, huge, scary things. And yet this time of year, like Rook, who could be pretty sketchy. I got her brand new blanket out last night because she had rain rot so bad. I have never dealt with it ever on the scale. A bunch of my horses got it to varying degrees. Like Novella didn't get it, Zorro didn't get it. But Prim had it all over little bumps as soon as it started raining right away. But hers was randomly gone in 3 days, and I didn't do anything. Really, really interesting. Rook, oh my God, Michael, I was like, what in the hell is this? Everyone got over it. Every single horse got over it. And she was covered from her withers all the way down. I'm like, oh, this is horrible. Side note, Gary suggested, well, and I hope he's not gonna be mad that I say this, but he did suggest that I give her some. He said he uses penicillin a little bit, you know, if it's really, really bad. So I put her on SMZs, not giving anyone a veterinary advice. I'm just telling you what I did was I did put her on SMZs for 5 days, and it really helped, combined with, of course, treating it with a topical. But I had treated it with a topical for several days without much of a result, so I'd never dealt with it before. Also, my farrier says Listerine. Anyway, bottom line is this much better now, ready for a blanket.
Tea gel dander shampoo works.
Oh.
Although I did have one that was very extreme and it required Dex. Like, it was bad. It was down her sides and everything, and it just kept spreading. And no.
Was it the little bumps?
No, this one was like, she looked like an Appaloosa because it got to where they were the big chunk.
Mine was, or Rook's was a tiny little stuff. Interesting. I don't have, I didn't really, wasn't really set up for washing. You know, just kind of Bannix is what I've been using. Anyways, point being, finally better. And yet it's pouring down rain, so I would like to keep her dry. So I get out her new blankie. And she's like looking at me, you know, and then she was like, bring me the blanket. I'm serious. You know how horses get super happy about the fly spray. They're beside themselves at first. And then pretty soon they're like, yeah, bring that over here. Put it on my belly. Right? They make, oh, that's another thing super interesting about Temple. The example of the crow making the
Oh,
plan
yeah.
for the, oh, that was really interesting. And horses planning, but really planning ahead. Of course, squirrels do that, but I guess I always think of squirrels just habitually doing
Yeah, I
it
was gonna
without.
say there's a difference between instinct and yeah.
Anyway.
What's interesting on the saving the water in the bucket that you brought up is like wild horses born in the wild
Don't.
will oftentimes not pass, well, I think I mentioned this the other day, will not pass water, even if it's just this little puddle, without wanting to stop and take a drink because they don't know, like, take advantage of it. It's here.
Absolutely.
And it's, I wonder how much that's learned by the environment by going thirsty for,
Or coming back and have it be gone.
yeah, versus just instinct that's been bred out of them, and they have to learn that, you know, through deprivation or
Trial
yeah,
and error a
trial and
little bit.
error.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's different than the squirrel, you
It
know, putting away nuts. Like, no one has to teach them that, I don't think.
Okay, so you guys should listen to the Temple Grandin Sunday special. It's here on the Northwood Farms page and Spotify, well, YouTube, like all the places. But she was talking about a crow who, I'm pretty sure, right? The crow had two different cages. One was the fancy cage, one was the fancy
There were
cage,
three.
and one was the boring one. and
And there was
then
a lot.
yeah, a lobby in between. And the crow figured out that sometimes it got locked in the boring one. So it was like, aha, I'm gonna bring some cool shit from
Oh,
the,
food. It was food.
yeah, it was food. But I think there were also other things, right? Maybe toys and whatever. And it would bring some to the boring one in case it got trapped there. I thought that was fascinating. It's so freaking cool. It's so neat. But I wanted to say about Rook. This is striking to me because she tends to be haven't really gotten her to bond. She only came to live with me full time last year. And you know that seasoning that happens over a year. So she was super standoffish. Now she'll hang her head over the stall door and want scratches. But I just want to reshare with you guys that doctoring her has really changed the relationship. And she did not like me picking that stuff off her body. So it wasn't like she was like, yay, I'm getting massages and treats and stuff. No, but I was taking care of her. That's all I want to say about her. Like, it's striking, though, I guess, is the reason I'm bothering to mention it is because the way she's looking at me, the way she's interacting with me is for sure different. And the only thing that has changed is me doctoring her.
On the this is inevitable, it's going altering, blanketing, whatever, saddling. People I'm not always the most patient person in certain situations, but people be like, oh, you're so patient. I'm like, yeah, because I know it's gonna work. Like, it's easy to be patient when you know it's going to come through. It's not like, oh, I hope that I can get them through this. And then on the other hand, you hear over and over, my horse doesn't like this, or he tosses his head, and it's kind of like this just acceptance.
Exactly.
Well, this is just what my horse does. I'm like, well, you do realize it doesn't have to do that, but you have to. Like, you have to know what to do about it, right? You have to believe that it can change, and then.
And then, of course, being able to observe horses that are happier after you require some things, after
Yeah,
you are.
that's huge. That's huge.
That's a huge deal because, yes.
So, Jen picked up her little baby horse yesterday, and she brought this pretty incredible thoroughbred that she got. Actually, the what did she say? I don't know. I think he's Minnesota bred, but he is the highest winning Minnesota horse ever, or on record to date. Anyway, pretty nice horse. But so I think I mentioned with Jen and her baby, Jen's just like a get it done, like kind of high energy, high intensity person, giving her some lessons, but it's kind of like, okay, now we're on to the next thing, not super systematic, diligent, like working at this piece of it. Faith is good friends with Jen, so you
He
can tell
was
Jen.
asking, yeah.
You can tell Jen I'm talking about her. So anyway, she brought her thoroughbred, who Faith has worked with some.
Is this Hot Shot? That's what she was saying, huh?
And Jen was here with her mom, and I think they were just, I don't know, maybe putting words in their mouth, but they were pretty impressed with the change from, her general request was like, I want him to be more connected to me. Like, he's not spooky or like way, distracting, but he's just not with me. He's looking over there. He's kind of blank. He's like the typical, horse that knows their job, and so they're kind of stoic in their job, but there's not really a connection there. And there's a little bit of a, okay, my world just changed from I had my routines on the track to now, what do I hang my hat on? So things are a little concerning. So now I'm even maybe kind of a standoffish horse, maybe a little bit more, who kind of holds things closer, kind of goes internal just a little bit. Not in a like I'm shutting down way, but just a like I'm gonna kind of close myself off a little bit. So she wanted to see that change. And I want to say it was the rectangle, but it was very much being specific with the rectangle, not just stay where I put you, but by softening, encouraging, shaping on the circle, encouraging forward and through with the inside. I mean, just all this. And by the end, I mean, he was just totally different expression. And he was like way more kind of cuddly, interactive at the end of it. And, again, I don't want to put words in her mouth. Like, she was blown away by it. But her and her mom were both like, wow, that, like, it's pretty
It's a
incredible
benefit, not a, yeah.
how much of a change. And it didn't take a lot because he wasn't real. None of it was real extreme, but he would, just kind of go and kind of be tuned out and thinking to the outside. And then if you put a little pressure on him, he's like, okay, now I really want to get away in my nose. So there were times where I cornered him pretty strong. It seems like, well, why are you doing that? Like he's not doing anything wrong. Like, but just defining that rectangle, saying when you feel the end of the rope coming, you've got to come off of it. And when I'm working with someone, like I don't know her mom. Well, her mom's never seen me work with a
And
horse.
I just want you to know my battery, unfortunately, is
Well, I should probably
so.
go anyway because I got.
But I want to hear the rest of
Oh.
it, but I just.
So I'm always, like I was saying the other day with the gentleman Ed in the clinic, like you're kind of feeling out, like I want to give you context for why I'm doing this because it could
Look.
seem like fairly severe, right? Or like even, with the baby at times where it's like he was just kind of gonna, ah, and it's like, no, you gotta move your hindquarters. And like, wow, you just really pulled on that horse, sir. Like the first time I helped Faith with something, and I'm like, I know she does body work, and like, or you're working with a vet, and you're like, you just really torqued on that horse. What are you doing to their spine, or whatever, all that. And so you want to be sensitive to that, and like explaining what you're doing while you're doing it, building credibility. And it didn't take much of that with him, but there were times where I was like, no, I'm going to corner you. And so I don't know what her mom was thinking in those moments. Who knows? Maybe she was like, eh, whatever. But to see the change in that short amount of time was, it was just really cool. So, I mean, being, I don't know where I started on this, but the rectangle, kind of back
Being
to the first part of our conversation where we were talking with the flag and the rectangle accomplishing all of that. Another big thing was it's not about getting away from the flag. You can come into the flag. The flag is just here, and that would be another one. Like, you're scared of the flag or you're not. Like, it's inevitable. You're there's no you not getting over the flag.
and yeah.
So.
Yeah, and we're gonna have to go for sure, but
Okay.
that's another thing where it's just like, well, I've seen it so many times. Like I, the human, am sure that this is gonna work. Whereas in the beginning, you're like, oh, I don't know if my horse can get over it. I'm sorry to cut this short, you guys, but I don't want to lose the show, so we're gonna have to be done so that I can save it. And that was my fault because I forgot to put my phone on the charger early enough. So I'm sorry about that. But anything else real quick, Michael?
Nope,
Okay.
not gotta go.
All righty. Well, thanks everybody for being here. Michael and I will be here again next Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
8:30 Central.
All
See you
righty,
then.
everybody. Bye.